Hello, everybody. This is a little message from me, Sam Lake, before you enjoy this episode. I just wanted to say thank you so much for everyone who has downloaded, watched, streamed the podcast so far. The response has been so overwhelming, so lovely, and we've got more exciting episodes and things and little bits coming your way very soon. I've got a little request to make of you. If you do enjoy this show, then please consider giving us a review on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify, preferably a 5-star if you've got it in you. And if it asks you to leave a little message, anything longer than 5 words would be lovely. That does sound specific, but basically what it does is it takes the algorithm, the dirty little algorithm, and it pinches the algorithm in that little sweet spot, and it gets the algorithm it gets the algorithm wet. It moistens the algorithm, it lubes it up so that we can get the podcast into the ears of many more people, which would be lovely. It sounds more graphic than it actually is, but that's enough from me. Thank you again, and enjoy this episode. You know, some people age like a fine wine, and some people age like a can of special brew left on a hot windowsill. Whichever one you are, get ready to talk about those pesky little emotions of yours, because it's time for another episode of I've Had a Rosé, Let's Talk About Feelings. Please welcome your host, Sam Lake.
It was me the whole time.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of I've Had a Rosé, Let's Talk About Feelings. This week, my guest... Oh my goodness, I love her. She's a girlina who slays. It is Chloe Pertz.
Hey. Hey, girl.
Hey, girl. Hey. Are you slaying?
Yeah, I'm kind of slaying. I suppose we should give the context of what we were doing before this podcast, which was having a massive fry up and a big hot chocolate.
We had a big old fry up, big old hot chocolate, cream and marshmallows. I was about to say mushrooms. I got confused.
Yeah, we have
popped a few mushrooms in there.
Popped a few champignons in a hot chocolate. In our chocolat chaud. Chaud,
parlez le français.
Oh, voulez-vous? but anyway, what I would say is I'm feeling simultaneously wired and tired.
Yeah.
And I think I've got a bad attitude at the moment.
Well, what a lovely thing to start the next 45 minutes of... of nice, friendly chats.
I feel bad. I just feel like I'm not bringing my best self. But I think if I just get that off my chest, then radical transparency.
This is a safe space.
Thank you.
So if you want to be a horrible bitch, I'm very much going to allow that.
Great. Thanks, baby.
This is a safe space. Feel however you want to feel. So we usually start every episode by talking about the guest's beverage of choice, something nice that they'd like to sip on whilst we chat about our feelings. But there's a bit of backstory to your choices.
Mm.
Essentially, what's in the mugs right now is just water.
Yeah, we've gone for a nice cup of water.
Yeah.
Because I think it's what I need. I think it's sort of, it will balance me out slightly and rehydrate me after I have a big salty fry up.
A big salty fry up. It's a very health conscious choice. Which is very different to the first choice that you made, which was...
A Yazoo
milkshake.
Yeah.
And when I said, I predicted that you would ask for a Yazoo milkshake.
It's funny because I don't really...
Never seen you drink one.
Drink Yazoos.
I do not look at Chloe Pertz and think, she likes a creamy beverage.
Why did you think I was going to choose that creamy beverage then?
I think because it's fun and colourful.
Oh.
And it would give you something to talk about. And also, when you agreed that it would be a Yop milkshake or a Yazoo milkshake, whatever the brand is called, you did ask if I would buy you one of every flavour and you would like to try them all on the pod.
And the thing is, that was earnest. That didn't feel like an
unreasonable ask. I 100% believe that's what you wanted to do.
If it's on the podcast money, this podcast isn't making any money, I thought I'm going to have one of every flavour.
One of every flavour. Banana, chocolate, strawberry. I think that might be it.
I'm sure they do sort of, limited edition ones like salted caramel.
You know M&S does a white chocolate one.
Are you fucking kidding me?
I would not lie about that.
That sounds insanely good.
Yeah, it is.
Oh my God, I'm going to have that. I already feel a bit sick from thinking about it.
Have it on the train.
No, I will throw up on the way to Aberdeen.
Will you?
And that's the most Aberdeen thing you can do, really.
That's just because of Aberdeen, baby. so we've not... Because of the fact that we had a big fry up before this episode
and a massive hot chocolate,
we're not doing yops.
We're not.
We did think about switching it to hot chocolate and bringing them here.
But then I just said I just wanted
You couldn't wait that long.
I couldn't wait that long. And also I wanted cream and marshmallows on top. And I thought that's not going to travel.
I did suggest that we could put the whipped cream in a separate cup and then decant it onto our hot chocolates
and
ourselves.
And I just shook my head.
Yeah. You slapped me in the middle of the cafe.
And it was warranted.
It was warranted.
Can I tell you about what I think about drinks like hot chocolate and Yuzu? I've had a journey with them.
Have you? Yeah?
Yeah, because like I've always sort of... I've never thought that I wanted to drink my calories because I'd rather eat my calories.
Okay, yeah.
But now I've just had sort of a realisation that it doesn't matter and I can eat what I want and drink as many calories as I want and just enjoy a hot chocolate as a lovely afternoon treat.
How freeing.
Really freeing.
Yeah.
I still haven't quite freed myself in terms of like, if I was going to have a burger and fries, I wouldn't still have a milkshake. That's just a bit too much for me.
I would say it's not enough.
But the thing is that it's still just this toxic diet culture thing, isn't it?
We have very different attitudes. Well, actually, no, I say that. Every time I've gone for dinner with you, you always start by jokingly saying, should we just get one of everything on the entire menu?
It's a wonderful bit.
It's a wonderful bit. Everyone's solid laughing. Bit. Everyone loves it. Me and David, when we order a delivery or takeaway to the house, we will order two dinners each. So if we went to Five Guys or something, burger, fries, shake.
Yeah.
I'll get a shake, I'll get a burger, I'll get the fries. I'll also get a hot dog and extra fries.
And are you eating them all in one night or are you saving it for the next day?
Depends on the kind of evening I'm having.
But you have like a weird boy's metabolism.
A weird boy's metabolism?
Yeah, well, just like, just everything. Just
like Benjamin Button? That's what that film was about, right?
He was just like, boy.
I just can't lose those extra 5 pounds.
I thought you meant it was like people going like, that boy is so weird. Imagine Tilda Swinton coming in like, that boy is really weird.
Tilda Swinton of all people.
Tilda,
she should talk.
Have a bit of compassion. Yes, he's a weird boy, but we love him for it.
Yeah. She was in a really weird film where something about pigs. I don't think we should explore that further.
Is it...
It's on the tip of your tongue, I can tell.
Babe, Pig in the City. Is that it? Yeah.
Yeah. She played Babe. Tilda Swinton was Babe.
Was she?
Yeah. All the things she can do with her voice.
She's a babe in my heart.
Is she? Do you like a bit of Tilda?
I love Tilda. I think she's really fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think she's great.
Tilda, if you want to come on the pod, by all means, I'd find that very strange.
I'll leave some Yazoo in the fridge for you. One of every flavour.
If you had to force Tilda Swinton to drink a Yazoo, what flavour would you be giving her?
White chocolate from M&S. Only the best for my Tilda.
That's very considerate of you.
Thank you.
She does deserve it. She has won an Oscar.
So hang on. What film about a pig was she in? It wasn't Okja, was it?
I think it might be that.
Right, okay.
Was there not a pig in that?
There was like pig figures.
Pig figures.
Sort of like pig. Pig adjacent.
Pig adjacent.
From what I can remember.
Porcine things.
That was a lovely use of that word.
I'm not sure if I used it correctly.
It's really funny because, like, in my head, I think of you as, like, quite basic and thick. But actually, when you think about it, you're really clever.
I am really clever, but nobody ever realises it just because I've got a lovely smile and a nice rack.
I'm always looking at your rack and then you'll say something like porcine and I'm like, oh, yeah, he has got a degree.
In computer science, and it's a 2-2. I don't do anything with it.
It's funny. How did you end up getting a 2-2? Because you're not thick. Did you just not work hard?
I think everyone is very intelligent in different ways.
No, that's not an answer to my question. Speak about yourself.
If you would let me finish speaking my truth before cutting me off.
Okay.
I said you can be a horrible bitch, but I will fight back. I found that going to university, and it's very different to when you're at school, and if you don't get something, you'll get kept behind afterwards so the teacher can explain it to you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
At university, they literally don't care. If you don't get something, they're just like, it does not affect me in any way if you do or don't pass this module. So when, like, it was really complicated algebra, which is not what I signed up for, I would just be like, I don't know how to do this. I think one time I did an algebra exam, and I knew nothing of what was going on, so I just drew a picture of a cat. Just a lovely little pussy. just being like, I didn't sign up for this.
Right, okay.
And do you know what? I failed that exam, but only by 1%. Because they like the picture of the cat.
No, you're lying.
University's wild.
University is wild. I didn't like it either. I didn't like the academic side of it. I liked everything else.
I like the social experience of going to university. I think that was very key to becoming the adult that I am now. But I hated the academic side of it. Did not like it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Feels like we've gotten too real too quickly.
I don't think there's such a thing.
Great. All right, then. Well, we're talking about the drink situation. So we're just enjoying a lovely refreshing cup of water. We care about our voices. We care about hydration.
We do. Yeah. And can I just say, was I present at the origins of this podcast?
I'm comedian David Race in Los Angeles. I host a celebrity-filled paranormal talk show like no other. Monstrosity has great guests answering weird questions. You won't believe the combo of celebrities and paranormal experts who've been on this show. I guarantee you'll like Monstrosity, or you get your time back. Go to monstrositypodcast.com right now and take a look.
You were the very first guest the first time that I did this podcast during lockdown.
But remember when you had your epiphany about feelings?
Yes.
Was I there?
You weren't there, but you were present for me realising what the epiphany was.
And what was the epiphany?
So
that you need to think about your feelings?
For the backstory was, I was at a New Year's Eve party and I mean, this isn't like radio. I'm allowed to say whatever, right? So
it's your own podcast.
It's my own podcast. Yeah, but I don't want to. So it was my first time doing an entire pill of MDMA. And I didn't feel anything until we went outside New Year's Eve to watch the fireworks from the street. You weren't there.
I wasn't there.
You weren't there. I went outside to watch the fireworks. Still felt nothing, but was having a lovely time. And then I freestyled a cover of Javine's Touch My Fire.
What do you mean you freestyled a cover? Like you
so like
did you like the original like
the original lyrics are Touch My Fire, Can You Feel the Heat?
Yeah.
My crazy rhythm's gonna knock you off your feet.
And this one was
And I changed
Touch
it.
My Fire, I Can Feel My Feet.
No.
Okay.
It was actually very nuanced. Okay. It was Touch My Fire, Can You Feel the Heat? I'll steal your husband whilst you're dancing with Mystique, because Javine famously stole Alicia Dixon's husband.
That's so good.
And then I thought, wow, I really am a rapstress.
Okay.
And then David got a call from his nan, and then his nan said like, oh, Happy New Year, Sam. And then I think I started breaking down. I got on the group chat.
By breaking down, what do you mean?
Like emotionally, I started to feel very emotional.
You don't mean like
I didn't have a breakdown being like, no, it's so sad because she just completely lost her marriage. And if she didn't do Strictly, she wouldn't be the woman she is today. Alicia Dixon, not my husband's grandmother. And so I was in the street and I just felt all of the feeling, nice feelings.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, you know, when you just like, you want to tell somebody like, God, I'm so glad that you're in my life. I absolutely love you.
Yeah.
It was that kind of feeling. So I got on the group chat to all of you, tried to record a video to send to all of you. I recorded it for so long and I was outside the whole time in the winter cold with no coat on, just my bare breasts. And I was recording the video and it took up so much memory on my phone. The video got lost. So you didn't see anything.
And you just sent like a video. You sent a video after, which was as though we'd seen that full video.
Yeah, and it didn't make any sense. And then when I got back into the house, I got into my friend's bedroom. I was just like, Karen, I need to talk to you. I need to talk to you in private, please. And then she got into the bedroom and she was just like, are you having an affair with... Are you cheating on your husband? I was like, no, I just need to tell you how much I love you. And then I queued everyone else up outside the door. It's like, have you got some time? I need to schedule in just to share my feelings about how wonderful I think you are. And I just kept doing that. And then the next day it persisted for a little bit.
Okay.
But now I find ever since that day, I've been a lot more into my emotions, and like I feel them a lot stronger and I allow myself to feel them.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And I've noticed, sorry about
could
that.
Could you not?
Yeah. Yeah, I could not. Yeah. Yeah. Mm. I've noticed since then that you've been better. You've just been like a much more emotionally engaged friend.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And I think it's beautiful to watch that growth in terms of now when I bring feelings to you, you can sit with the feelings, you can help me process them.
Whereas before, I would have been like, oh, that sounds bad. Would you like some money? Will yeah. that make this stop?
That's literally yeah. what happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. It's just really nice to have seen some of my male friends go through that journey of like not having been equipped with, you know, language for their feelings.
We're often not equipped with the skills to be able to articulate what yeah. it is that we're feeling, which but is why we just go around punching
things.
Yeah, punching buses, sticking flares up our arse.
Punching bussies.
Punching bussies.
Yeah.
Fingering people on the dance floor. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. This is, shall I tell it on the podcast?
Yeah, I think if you want to speak your truth, go
I
ahead.
Went to Mighty Hoopla on the weekend in Bognor Regis, of course, and the dance floor was filled with gay men.
Yeah.
And obviously, famously, I have no problem with that.
Mm.
And it got to about 2 a.m. and around 2 a.m. the gay men go feral. And what happened was they all had their tops off, you know, harnesses, they were sweaty.
Yeah.
I look to my left, there's two gay men kissing. And I think, still don't have a problem with this. That's in fact, I actively encourage it. I thought, that's lovely.
It was really nice of you to hold back your vomit at my wedding when I kissed David on the mouth.
And then what I'm about to say in Mighty Hoopla is similar to what happens at your wedding. Two men were kissing and then I looked down. One of them had his ass fully out and the other one had a couple of fingers up there, just fingering his asshole on the dance floor.
And can I just say, beautiful turn to camera as he's had fingers up the asshole.
Fingers up the asshole.
Clip lovely. Gorgeous. Put a clip on that.
And it's been interesting to me. I've told this story to literally everyone because my reaction was a very mature one, which is I went round to every single person, maybe within like a 20 meter radius on that dance floor and just went, look over there, there's some fingers up an asshole. And every person that I've bumped into since, I've been like, guess what I saw in the weekend? And it's been really interesting to different people's different reactions to it. And actually your husband had the most puritanical one and he's like the only gay man that I've told it to. And I think it's just because like gay men are just like, fuck's sake, like I don't want everyone to think we're like that.
Yeah.
But the two best reactions I've had were a friend went, God, that's so chic.
Very chic.
So chic.
So chic.
And then the other friend said, do you think they knew each other? Which is kind of sweet and pure.
It's very pure. I think what I said was, how do you know that that man wasn't that man's proctologist?
Yeah, and you did say that, but when I do this routine on stage, I'm going to say that I said that.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, it was a writer's room you didn't know you were in.
It was a writer's room. It's fine. I don't need the credit. I'm doing perfectly fine.
At the end, I'll say, and it was Sam Lake's asshole.
Thank you.
There was something quite beautiful about the way that their bodies connected, though. Like, I don't want to use the word glove, but I am, you know. Their bodies were just like quite beautiful men and they like fit together really well. And like the hand just like so neatly just like sat up his asshole that I was like, there's something quite elegant about this.
Chic. It was a chic fingering.
It was a chic fingering.
It was a chic fingering.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know how to segue from that into the next bit.
Football?
Yeah.
We're talking about football.
Well, I mean,
We've got fingers up our assholes.
It's a very anal. I feel like there's a lot of anal experiences in football, especially of recent years. Flares up the bum.
Oh, okay, right. I wonder
getting
where
bums
you were going.
Out.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, no. That's it's, right, yeah.
Yeah, because I think it's a very. I think it's quite a masculine thing to think of the bum and the bum hole as sources of humour rather than, like,
A
sexual pleasure centre.
Yeah.
So every guest chooses their topic, something that gets you emotional, feels your feelings. I've known this about you for a very long time. I knew you were going to choose football.
Yeah.
You love a bit of footy.
I love a little footy.
So there's one thing about you, You love a kickabout.
J'aime jouer au foot.
J'aime jouer au foot.
Avec mes copines.
Not avec the copines.
With my copines.
With the copines.
Yeah.
Lovely family who live down the road from you.
Me and the garçons.
Les garçons.
Me and the garçons.
Les garçons au foot.
Oui. Okay,
right.
I know what's
language.
Happening.
We've got to stop.
No. I know what's happening, which is you're prevaricating because you're scared of talking about football.
I don't know what that word means.
You can do this.
Okay. So I've written questions ahead of time so I can prepare.
I've also just seen that you've written the words Jurgen Klopp.
That's for later.
Just Jurgen Klopp and that's it. The whole card just says Jurgen Klopp. So, Chloe, Jurgen Klopp. Discuss.
If I turn it around, it was just a picture of him. Chloe, do you have anything to say to this man? No. My first question, I did prepare. What is football? No, I know what football is. I know what football is, but I specifically want to know, what is it about football that gets you emotional?
That I j'aime jouer.
That you j'aime jouer. What is it about football that gets you emotional? Because it's one of those things. Obviously, it's not that I don't know nothing about it. I do know two things about it.
Yeah, and I know what those two things are.
That Teddy Sheringham used to play football.
Yep.
And that Crystal Palace's arch nemesis are Brighton.
Really good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Pardon that. But when I try and think of like emotional experiences, I equate it to how I feel about the Eurovision Song Contest. In that I follow it all year round. Other people won't know about the little matches that happen outside of the big stuff, like a World Cup, the Euros, Premier League, all of that stuff. You follow it all of the time. So does it get you emotional because you're following the journey of a player or a team?
Yeah. I think that's exactly right. I think it's like, see it as like the longest running soap in history.
Right. Okay.
Like all of the sort of intricacies and ins and outs, like there's stories, and then there's stories within stories, and then there's stories within stories. So there's whatever game you turn on, if you like whatever game I could turn on around the world, as long as I could understand the language of the commentator, I would be able to, within the first 10 minutes, know what the story of that game is. So he's got a rivalry with him. These people hate each other. They're this place in the league.
Yeah.
So this game means this. And you can find emotion in it via context.
Mm.
But I actually think Eurovision is a really great thing to bring up, because I feel like I was able to understand you possibly the best of any of your friends that didn't know much about Eurovision.
Yeah.
When England...
Which is most of my friends.
When the UK were doing really well.
It was the UK and Spain.
The UK and Spain were doing really well.
Two countries neck and neck.
And
then Ukraine won, and I was like somewhat devastated. But I think you said this to me about England making the final of... Was it the Euros?
The Euros, yeah.
And afterwards, I think I was actually trying to message people that I knew were watching it with you, being like, I know she's not going to respond, but please, can you make sure that she's okay?
Yeah.
I think you said something afterwards of being like, I was obviously devastated that we didn't make it, but also very grateful that we were able to make it to that point.
Yeah.
And that's what I felt about the UK and Spain at Eurovision.
And I think like we are able to give each other good care in those situations, because we understand that it's kind of meaningless, but it means everything to us.
Yes, exactly.
And so I knew in that situation what you would be going through, because I've gone through it with England, and I knew that like your emotions would be going through the absolute ringer.
Yeah.
And like that, although lots of other people that don't understand it could look at it and think that's silly, I understand the power of those feelings.
100%.
And I don't know if the Eurovision is the same for you, but certainly for me, it represents so much more, which is, I think that football is always a place where I've been able to put feelings that I wasn't able to process.
Okay, yeah.
And sometimes that's negative, right? So, you know, I would say every major tournament since 2016, since Southgate was in charge, I would say I've got steaming drunk, because I've invested so much emotionally in those games that I'll get drunk during the games, and that's fine if you win, but if you lose,
difficult.
It's really difficult.
Yeah.
And there have been like active consequences of my behavior, which I talk about in the show that I'm touring currently, where like I've got into physical altercations, I've put myself in a lot of danger.
Yeah.
So I can really sort of relate to meathead men that like try and get punched to feel something. Like, it's not quite that extreme for me.
Wow.
But
yeah,
you put you put emotions into football that you can't process otherwise. Yeah. So I've been working on processing those emotions outside of football so mm-hmm. that I don't get myself into this position where when we lose, I'm lashing out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I find it super interesting.
Has that work that you've done outside of using football matches as a way to process those feelings, has it changed your experience now of watching games or following football? Does it feel different to you?
Yeah, I feel like I have a lot more compassion towards the players that are involved.
Okay.
And I think I have a better attitude towards loss than I did before.
Okay. Yeah.
So like, I think I would be really fucking upset for ages and ages and ages yeah. if we lost a game, and I wouldn't be able to even like engage in. So, you know, after England lost that final, I couldn't think or look at football for like a week.
You need a break, yeah.
Or like 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Whereas now, like, I feel like I'm able to look at loss, you know, with like humility and understanding that it doesn't yeah. matter that much, and like it's part of a journey, and there'll be that. The beauty of football is that there'll always be another opportunity for us to do something.
Mm.
And I think basically, like, partially why I couldn't look at football after it had given me an extreme emotional response is because I was scared of looking at those feelings.
Yeah.
Right. So now I can, yeah. And do you know what really helped me is that play Dear England?
Is this the one, is it loosely based around Gareth Southgate?
It's not loosely, it's completely.
It is
based.
His life.
So it's not his life. It basically starts at 98. I think that's, no, could it be 98? Whenever he missed his penalty.
Okay, so that's like, so he played for England.
He played for England, and he really famously missed a penalty, which right. got us knocked out of this tournament.
Against Argentina?
I don't remember.
Okay.
But it might be.
Imagine.
You know something about football that I don't? I'm proud of that.
Thank you very much.
Well, I knew something about Eurovision that you didn't know this morning, but I'm not allowed to say it live on air.
What was that? No, that's not fair. She's come a long way since doing that. And you know what? In Spain, they just don't know any better at the time.
Okay. Sounds like you're justifying it a little bit too much here. Anyway, Dear England was fantastic because he missed this penalty, and then yeah. basically the whole narrative is like, it's following the three tournaments that he's been in charge since 2016. So the, what would it have been? Euros, World Cup. Why can't I remember any of the details?
I really can't help you.
World Cup. It was World Cup, Euros, World Cup. So maybe yeah. it's 2018.
Okay.
And anyway, it's following his journey, and it's basically like him, like penalties as an England fan.
Yeah.
Become a as an England fan and an England player, become a metaphor. Mm. So he basically, like, they put some footage up on, like, they get a psychologist in, they put some footage up during the play, and it's, I believe, Jamie Carragher taking a penalty. And he misses he takes the first penalty. He has to retake it because, like, there was some
technical issue or something.
Breach. Yeah. He has to retake it and he misses it the second time. And the psychologist goes, right, so the way that England take a penalty is the fastest in world football, and they're the worst at penalties in world football.
What, as in they're the quickest to get the penalty?
No. So in a penalty shootout, yeah, the player will take it after 2.3 seconds.
Right.
The Germans, who are the best, it will wait like 8 seconds.
Yeah, okay.
And the English players look down. They have their shoulders down. They're very negative body language. They don't look at any of their teammates. They don't look at the goalkeeper. They just look down.
Wow.
They take the penalty really quickly. Yeah. And the psychologist was basically like, this is how, like, this kind of represents like an English psyche, which is that we think we're on our own. We don't look around us at our teammates for support. We don't look at the thing that we fear,
yeah.
which is the goalkeeper.
Right.
And missing. Like, we're not good at looking. And yeah. we just rush things without thinking and feeling. So this was all about, like, trying to make us look at the thing that we're scared of the most, realize that we're part of a team that is all accountable, and we can all be honest with each other.
Yeah.
And taking our time and just really taking things in. And that really worked as a metaphor for me because I was like, yeah, that is what I was doing, which is basically I find it really hard to watch this play because it was taking me back to all of these times where I felt these really visceral emotional responses. And it was cool where it was just telling, don't be scared of them. Just look at them straight in the face.
Look straight in the face.
Look, just look them straight in the face.
Look them straight in the face.
So now I just feel great that I can just look at things straight in the face.
That is fascinating.
Isn't it fascinating?
And when you were saying that, I was thinking of my limited experience. I sort of only watch football. I think like a lot of people who don't follow football all year round, I watch it when there's the Euros or the World Cup, the big event. So obviously I was watching when England were in the Euro finals.
Yeah.
In a pub in Peckham watching it, and it went to penalties. And I remember the day after a lot of chat and a lot of discourse about what was being said about the players who missed their penalties, who I think if, correct me if I'm wrong, they're all non-white.
They were all black men, yeah.
Yeah. So you talking about Southgate in that play, when he missed that, obviously that happened in a time where social media wasn't a thing. Mm. Now we do have social media, and so there's a lot more, you see a lot more discourse. This discourse was probably already happening, but we weren't aware of it at the time.
Yeah.
But now it's all there front and centre. So when you say you have an easier time empathising with the players, does that factor into a situation like that? Because I think those three men got it quite rough because they were carrying the hopes of a nation. But then there was also what seemed like quite a heartwarming uplift of people going like, no, these are also three men who got the nation to that point and they tried.
They did it like they were the bravest people in that team and in that country,
Do you think football fans as a whole are getting better at empathising with the players and the pressure that that carries?
Possibly. I'm not sure. But like, certainly the ones with good sense are.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably is my answer.
Good.
I think football is becoming a lot more inclusive as a whole, and like, it's definitely not there, but like, going to the football now, like, I don't feel, like, I just feel like most people are lovely.
That's really nice. Yeah.
And like, you get some fucking thick idiots.
Yeah.
But it's just funny. Like, it's really funny how stupid people can be at the football.
Do you mean stupid? So like, if you took me to a football match, I would need you to remind me which goal is which.
Yeah.
And what colour shirts the teams are wearing.
Yeah.
And also what stadium we're in. And remind me if football is the one with the funny shaped ball or is that rugby?
That's rugby. Yeah.
But like, my knowledge of the game wouldn't be great, but I would try and show an appreciation for the event.
Yeah.
Do you mean you get thick people who don't understand the game, or thick people in other ways?
Thick people, well, probably other ways as well, but I can't really be the judge of that. But just people like, where they'll just be like, they think they know about football and then will say like the dumbest thing in the whole entire world. Like, I can't really give you an example because you won't know what it means. But like,
like if someone said like, no, I think Millwall's actually quite nice.
Yeah, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, just stuff like that. But it's stuff like, you're not going to understand the phrase.
Just do it and then like,
play it out from the back. What do you think that means? Play it out from the back.
I think that means when you're at Mighty Hoopla, you get a guy to give you a reach around and two fingers up the back. Yeah.
What do you really think it means?
Okay, play it from the back. Play out from the back. Okay. I assume you're talking about one end of the pitch.
I am.
So, okay, why would they be at the end of the pitch? Has the ball gone to the goalie?
Yes.
And so the goal, is that when the goalie kicks it as far as they can?
So interestingly, it's the opposite of that.
Oh, kicks it to a player very nearby.
Yeah.
And then they lead the charge.
Love it. Yeah, I love that. Very Alfred Lord Tennyson of you.
Were they in S Club 7? Once again, just here, because of my lovely big jokes, okay?
So play out from the back is exactly what you've described.
Mm.
The goalkeeper, instead of lumping it long, will pass it to a defender and they'll try and do more passes up the pitch rather than just knocking it long.
So trying to get a big man
to head it down to a smaller man.
Mm.
So that's been in the game for at least the last 10 years, where football players have become more technically competent. So even the ones that are in lower teams have got very good touch, very good passing, very good technical skills with the ball at their feet. And that's happened for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. Guy sits behind me, basically is like, I hate it when they play out from the back. I hate it when they should just lump it long. And it's like, you are describing football from the 1980s.
It feels like, or it could just be the way that you've described it. And also because we're friends, if you say that anyone disagrees with you, I'll just be like, they're an absolute bitch. Absolutely hate them. I don't care. I'll run over their mum.
The thing is, Sam doesn't even drive, but he would take his test. Yeah. He would pass it so that he could run over their fucking mother.
I'd sit in the car and they'd be like, oh, you're doing this, you can have a bit of freedom of movement. And I'd be like, no, I want to run over one man's mum and then I'll never drive again. But the way you were describing the attitude of that man immediately, without knowing too much about, even though you've just explained it to me, I immediately thought, this feels like a very, like, old-fashioned masculine approach.
It's like saying, it's not like back in my day. It's like being like, you know, bring back the war mentality when he didn't grow up in the war, you know?
Yeah.
It's like that kind of thinking. Yeah.
Okay. So I've often, one day I would love to go to a match with you.
You must come, babe.
I simply must.
Yes? Yeah?
No, I wanted to say it properly in French and I don't think I remember enough of it. What do you want to say? J'aime jouer au Wembley.
What were you trying to say?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
J'aime jouer au Klopp. Have you got one about Klopp for me?
Yeah, I got Klopp. But until we do that, I would love to know what, like, your dream experience of a football match would be, because I think I've got a preconceived idea of what it would be like from the one football match I went to, I think when I was like 12 or 13.
Was your dad trying to make you not go?
No, it was
my uncle.
if it was, it didn't really work. It was actually in Spain, and we went to go to the stadium in Gijón to watch, I can't remember if this is actually teams that were playing or a joke from The Simpsons. I think it was Uruguay versus Paraguay, or Uruguay. It was two Latin American countries, I think.
Oh, okay. Well, if it was, then like, why wouldn't it be Uruguay versus Paraguay?
Well, yes, but then I just keep thinking, I swear that was a joke from The Simpsons, and it's just the same two people kicking the ball back and forth. And I'm going like, wow, what a stunning display of passing. But I remember watching that and I just didn't really enjoy it. Everyone was so rowdy. And even back then, I was just like, this is not a space for me to occupy.
Yeah.
Now I think I could go back and I'd be like, you know what? I'll have a lovely time. I'll embrace it for what it is.
And the thing is like, I could sit you in a bit of the stadium which is less rowdy and like more inclusive and nice.
I would love to be in an inclusive, nice bit. Would that be the bit of the stadium where it's like the car park? And you just leave me in the car, leave the window open a little bit. But what would be, if you could curate, like, you're going out to see a match one day, what is like the fantasy match? Like, who's playing against each other? Are you watching from a box? Are you in the stands? Who's there with you?
I'm watching from the stands for sure. So, you know, it's about the ceremony.
Mm.
Shall I tell you about my favourite ever game that I went to?
I would love to hear
it. And this is what I would like to replicate.
Yeah.
So I went to the pub with my friend Joe.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a Palace fan.
Right.
Too. So we go to the games a lot together.
Yeah.
And we took our friend Beth. So I think there would be an element of wanting to show this world to someone that I care about.
Right, like when I show people songs from Eurovision and I'm looking at them watching it, being like, are they enjoying it?
Yeah, yes. Just like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have some kind of friend that hadn't been to a game before, like maybe yourself.
Yep.
We would go to the pub, and on this evening we went to our favourite pub in London called The Conquering Hero.
Mm-hmm.
They had a pig, potbelly pig called Francis Bacon, who actually died this week. Rest in peace.
Oh, Francis. Rest in peace. Francis Bacon.
We did
the pig.
We did a minute silence.
The original one's been dead for quite some time.
we did a minute silence and we wore black armbands for Sir Francis.
That's really lovely, actually.
Yeah. Probably my favourite pig that there's ever been, apart from the one played by Tilda Swinton. Francis Bacon was played by Tilda Swinton.
She sure was. Yeah.
So anyway, we had a couple of pints and we were like so excited. We were so buzzing.
This is pre-game.
Pre-game.
Right.
Yeah. So I like a little drunken buzz. Not too drunk, but a buzz. A
little buzz.
Get to the game in good time. You know, 10 minutes before kickoff. So yeah. You're there. You're not worried about getting in the queue to the stadium. Because Palace is quite old school. So it's not very easy to get in.
Okay.
And then what happened was we were playing Bournemouth. So me and Joe were like feeling really confident. We were like, it's Bournemouth at home. We're going to win this game.
A Bournemouth a bit.
They were at the time just like, fine. Right? They weren't great, but they were fine. But we were like, we're at home. We're in a good form. We're going to win this.
Okay.
So we were buzzing. We were like, yeah, it's going to be amazing. We're a bit drunk. This is fantastic. We've petted a pig. Great evening. And we had a player sent off within like the first 20 minutes.
God damn it.
And me and Joe were like, for fuck's sake, this is so Palace that we're so excited and now we're going to go and lose this game because we had a player sent off. Well, I don't know what minute it was, but I'm going to guess it was around the 69th minute.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I've chosen that one just for you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Jeffrey Sharp comes running through.
Jeffrey.
He bangs the ball into the bottom left-hand corner.
Yeah.
Joe and I go fucking wild. Okay. We go absolutely wild.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Schlupp runs over to where me and Joe are sitting in the corner. We're sat right by the corner and he's right in front of us, you know, as far as the producers are from us now.
Okay.
And I'm thinking I could charge through the hoardings and run onto the pitch and hug him. He's that near. And as I'm thinking I could charge through the hoardings and run onto the pitch and hug him, maybe about 100 people have the same thought behind me and push me, propel me onto the pitch, and I fall over and I'm like laying on my back like a little hamster that can't get up.
A little turtle that
can't get up.
Yeah.
So I'm just sort of laying in this barrage of men that are hugging these football players, and eventually I managed to get myself up and like get myself back in the huddle, and I'm like hugging them, and it was crazy. Like I don't think I've ever had an adrenaline rush like it, nor will I ever have an adrenaline rush like it again. It was so incredible. And there's all of these pictures because Joe got to the... As I fell over, Joe got to Jeff Schlupp, and there's all of these pictures that newspapers took of him holding Jeff's face in his hands. And it's so amazing because he's just screaming in his face. And it was just like this euphoria, and we won this game and then we went for more pints after. So, yeah, it's the pint sandwich for me. It will be a game that Palace win with pints either side with friends that I love.
That's really beautiful.
Thank you.
I'd love to do that one day.
You can. Okay. You will. I'm going to take you.
All right.
I can't wait, babes.
Can I share a similar experience about something me and David did that's Eurovision related, which I think is similar, doesn't have as happy an ending?
Did you charge the stage and hug Ruth Lorenzo?
Not quite.
Okay, what happened?
Did you say Ruth Lorenzo?
Yeah, I lost that one.
A little roll of the...
Lorenzo.
And then we'll come on to the final section. We, in 2018, so Dave and I had been together for 2 years. It was the first Eurovision I properly got him into.
Sure.
There was a woman who represented Cyprus and she was called Eleni Foureira. She represented Cyprus, had the song Fuego, absolute banger, song of the summer. It was great. And she was like an underdog. And then when it got to the week of Eurovision, she absolutely smashed it. She came second.
God bless her.
I couldn't believe how well she did. It's the best result Cyprus has ever had. And because she was such a success in lots of different countries around Europe, she came to London and she did a concert. We got tickets as soon as we could. Saw her live, was great. And then we were like, that's simply not enough for Reda. So we go and see her again with Karen. And she doesn't come on stage until like 1 a.m. We're at the front of the stage.
Yeah.
We can reach out and touch her. And because she's a very giving performer, she's that thing where like she reaches out to the crowd.
Yeah.
And she offers her hand and she's like touching people. And I was filming her doing this and David was next to me. David reaches out his hand and like they're about to touch her and be like, oh my God, I'm so glad I've got this on camera. This is what a beautiful moment. He'll absolutely love this. They touch hands and then I see David grab Eleni Foureira's hand and like he's really grabbing onto it. And she's still, we're in the middle of the stage, so she's trying to get to the other people who've got their hands out. So she carries on walking and in her hand, she's just like walking and singing and she just goes, because David refuses to let go of her. So then I have to like dismount David's hand from her and she's actively like yanking it away.
Had he just panicked or was he in a misogynistic hate crime?
a little of column A, a little of column B. I like what I like. But I have it all on video.
Did he just panic?
I think he just panicked and it sort of looked like that he was trying to kidnap her.
David.
I know.
Did it lead to good conversation around accountability?
It led to healthy dialogue. And then when we thought nobody was looking, I gave him a couple. No, I didn't.
Do you want to do your quick fire on our session?
I'd love to do my quick fire one.
Is it Jürgen Klopp?
Yeah, it's just Jürgen Klopp written down 7 times. Love talking to you about football. Really, genuinely, lovely insights there. I would like to get your quick fire thoughts and feelings on a couple little topics.
Yeah, fantastic.
And then we'll wrap things
football
up.
Football related or anything related?
They're anything related, apart from one, which I think might relate to football.
Jürgen Klopp.
I don't know if you can guess what it is.
Okay.
We'll go in order. First one, Mountain Warehouse.
Yes.
Just yes?
No. Also no. I'd go in there. I think they've got some good stuff that I would need. Walking boots. You know, maybe if I wanted to do some cold water swimming, I'd get myself a...
Diver's helmet. Yeah.
I like that. Sometimes they stock the brand Grimici, which is a cool fashion brand, but they like think that they're...
They think that they're
sort of utility.
They think they're girlinas who slay, but...
Yeah. They are girlinas that slay, but they just slay in a different way to Mountain Warehouse.
Okay, fair enough.
I wear them to the club rather than up the mountain.
What if the club's up the mountain?
What if the club's in a warehouse?
It's too big a question for us to handle.
I'm really bad at quickfire.
No.
I have no zest for improvisation.
Okay, fine. There's only 6 more to go. Dark chocolate.
No. You know
absolutely
that.
Not.
You know I don't like it.
I do know.
You
I ask
like
everyone.
It
don't like it.
No.
When there's milk available.
Obviously I'm having it.
Just have a milky chocolate.
Babes, have you seen that I think they're doing a marbled Cadbury's Easter egg of milk chocolate and white chocolate?
I will have that.
Should we have that?
Yeah.
Should we get it for Easter?
I think we should.
Can we stir it into a hot truck?
You absolutely could. We've tried it for the first time in my Velvetizer, shredding a chocolate bar.
Fuck off. How is it?
It was great. Lovely.
Babes, why didn't you tell me last night when I was staying at your house?
Because we had other stuff to talk about. Fingering at Mighty Hoopla. Next one. What are your thoughts and feelings about the donkey and the dragon from the film Shrek having kids?
Really fine about it.
Yeah? You think that's okay?
Yeah, I think it's great queer representation on the screen.
We only see them as kids, though, so when they grow up, what do you think they will sound like?
Let me think about that. What does the dragon sound like? Does it ever roar?
It just roars and breathes fire.
I think the donkey and the dragon will sound like the Do the Roar kid.
Oh, do the roar.
Yeah, I think that's how that sounds. Yeah.
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 Lovely. Keeping it in the Shrek universe as well.
Thank you.
I don't think you'll predict this one. Jürgen Klopp?
He's a Jürgen Flop for me.
Great.
I think he's obviously an absolutely incredible manager and he's likeable, but I think he's actually like secretly evil.
Okay.
And like a really bad loser and quite like a mean vindictive man.
Mm-hmm. Ewan's nodding. He agrees.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's just like a horrible side to him that we all forget. Like I think he's really, like he bullies people.
I heard somebody said something to him at the stadium once and he took it so personally that he learned how to drive just so he could run over that man's mind. I'm just saying it's toxic. We must keep toxic out of the football community. This is the last one.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of people who get very well-known phrases and sayings ever so slightly wrong?
I don't really care that much.
So for example, somebody would say, if you were talking quite loudly, somebody would go, "Who do you think you are? Loud Claire?" And be like, "I'm sorry?" And you'd be like, you know how everyone is always like, "Yeah, I hear you, Loud Claire." And I think they're saying, "I hear you loud and clear, not Loud Claire." Claire's laughing in the corner because her name's Claire.
No, and also that is really funny.
It is quite funny, isn't it?
I didn't know what was going on, but now I do. And I'd find that funny, actually.
It would be quite, it'd be a bit of a laugh.
This is probably how I'd react. Okay.
Okay.
Loud Claire. That's probably what I would say.
One time somebody was putting a dampener on the situation and instead of saying, "You're being such a wet blanket," I said, "You're being a real moist towel."
On purpose or by accident?
By accident. Because I knew wet blanket, but I forgot the saying and then tried to come up with the metaphor on my own, and I got to moist towel instead of wet blanket.
Here's a question for you to finish the podcast.
Sure.
The other day I was on a run and I went past three boys, and it was next to school, and there were three Lime bikes.
Mm-hmm.
And they ran to the Lime bikes and they were trying to see if one of the Lime bikes like might be unlocked.
Yeah.
Just chancing it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Two of the Lime bikes were locked. One of the Lime bikes was unlocked, and the boy got to ride off on the Lime bike, and he was like cackling and his mates were pissed off. And one of them said, "Oh man, you're wet. You're so wet. That's so wet."
Mm.
What do you think he meant by wet? Do you think wet blanket? Do you think his bussy was...
How old were these kids?
Oh, not old enough for me to have said that.
No. wet, soppy.
You think?
Yeah.
That's what you think?
I think a general...
Like a wet blanket.
I think they were being very Phantom Tax. I heard that said on TikTok and I don't know what it means, and I hope I'm saying it in the right context.
I think they had great riz.
Oh, their riz was just firing out of their pussies. We have to stop before we get into a Holly and Phil situation, I think.
Who's Holly, who's Phil?
I think we're both Holly and both Phil.
At the same time?
Yeah.
I think that's what being non-binary is.
Do you think, being both Holly and Phil?
And Phil, yeah, at the same time.
Well, if you're non-binary, please get in touch and let us know how you feel about that.
Pre-allegation.
Pre-allegation, but
back,
it was still...
Back when we liked him.
Yeah.
When he was the nation's sweetheart.
We knew what was happening. Chloe, it's been lovely to have you.
I love you.
I love you too. Before you go, is there anything that you'd like to absolutely plug right up?
I'd love to plug my tour.
Gorgeous tour, excellent show.
If you can't say anything nice, it's about anger.
The show is called If You Can't Say Anything Nice.
Yeah.
Not asking people if you can't say anything nice about the show.
If you can't say anything nice, then don't fucking come.
I'll run over your mum.
So I'm doing that. Go to chloepets.org, all the dates are there. Be doing the Edinburgh Fringe again, come to that.
Stunning.
If you're in Melbourne, then I'm doing that as well, come to that. Yeah, other than that, just follow me on Instagram.
Follow you on the Instagram.
Follow me on Instagram.
You just at Chloe Pets on Instagram.
Yeah, bitch.
Just at Chloe Pets.
Yeah, bitch.
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 Well, Chloe, thank you so much.
You're a bitch.
You're a bitch. Oh, yeah, we were going to pretend to have a fight and then you can storm off.
I don't love that, but okay.
Well...
Stop reading... Okay, here we go. Stop reading passages from my girlfriend's autobiography, you whore.
It's not my fault that your girlfriend is... I was going to say Anne Frank. Oh. We can't do that.
Let's just stop. We can't go on. Oh dear. I think Anne Frank would have been a believer.
Chloe, thanks so much. All my love to Anne. And thank you so much for watching.
You're welcome. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to another episode of I've Had a Rosé, Let's Talk About Feelings. Well, I assume you've listened to the episode. If not, hope you're enjoying your nap. If you did enjoy the episode, why not subscribe to it on your favourite podcast platform? And if you really enjoyed it, why not leave us a nice review there whilst you're at it, specifically on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It would really help us out. And of course, you can tell people about the show and tag us using the handle I've Had a Rosé. You can also follow us on all forms of social media where we're posting our favourite clips from the show and extra little bits of content here and there. Thanks so much for listening, and see you again for the next episode.